That is why I know that the humans in Akkadia, Babylon and in Sumer already knew the planets of the solar system, and so forth. 112. However, that which emerges from old texts regarding the Anunnaki and the planet Nibiru is based on mythological facts as well as beliefs, misguidance and erroneous assumptions. 113. The Anunnaki beings were a pure imagination of the Earth humans, who, full of fantasy and according to their beliefs, fabricated the Anunnaki people from the planet Nibiru, as the giant shape in the sky appeared, which truly did not deal with an actual planet, rather it concerned an uncommonly big comet, which actually does have an orbital period around the solar system of around 3,600 years. 114. That therefore only entered as myth into the imagination of the ancient Earth humans. Indeed, it truly never existed, because the comet is not in a position to bear human life. 115. It must be said in addition to that, that the designation Phaeton is completely wrongly used, because Phaeton was the planet which was destroyed by its inhabitants, namely Melona, which shattered into thousands of pieces and today forms the asteroid belt. 116. Regarding the planet Melona, respectively, Phaeton, it is also wrongly asserted that that was the planet from which the Earth and its moon arose. 117. Tiamat, namely, is a designation born of an old Earth language, for the planet Phaeton, respectively Melona, which was destroyed through human irrationality. 118. Now the only thing still to say is that a big planet, with great speed, on the other side of the sun, orbits the star and can therefore never be seen from the Earth. 119. It deals thereby with an uninhabited planet which we have given the name Cathn, which, however, will drift out of the solar system in the time to come. 120. But that does not concern the aforementioned comet. 121. And apart from that, there are yet two different belts on the other side of the orbit of Pluto, in which comets and wandering planets move, a great number of which penetrate into the inner solar system at regular, periodic, albeit sporadic, intervals. 122. Thereby diverse ones of these can also sporadically endanger the solar planets, which, again and again, at greater intervals in time, also leads to comets actually impacting with planets. Billy, can you please explain somewhat more about that? Quetzal, 123. The first belt, a zone, is located up to more than 150,000 astronomical units from the Sun. Day 124. An astronomical unit thereby corresponds to the mean distance from the Sun to the Earth, thus 149,597,870 kilometers. 125. At an earlier time, when the Giza pyramids were built, this distance however still amounted to 152,500,000 kilometers, a number which is also of enormous significance in regard to the calculation of the entire universe's 280 elements. 126. 150,000 astronomical units corresponds to around 4,000 times the distance from the Sun to the planet Pluto, which is essentially the last of the planets in the solar system known to the humans. 127. All other objects outside the orbit of Pluto already belong to the zone of the first belt. 128. It, Billy, excuse me, but then what is it with the 10th planet, that is supposedly zooming around out there? You have always spoken of such a 10th, and further planets. Quetzal, 129. In addition to the smaller planets far outside the orbit of Pluto, it deals thereby with the Earth-sized planet Cathn, which, with very great speed and at a great distance, follows its orbit around the Sun, however, in the coming years drifting away more and more, and disappearing into space. 130. Its period of orbit around the Sun is so big that, seen from the Earth, it remains constantly hidden behind the Sun. Day 131. But listen further. 132. Located in the aforementioned first zone of the first belt far outside the orbit of Pluto, are, according to estimations, 130000000 smallest, small, medium-sized, large and largest objects, of which, again according to estimations, some 130 billion cometary nuclei must be taken into consideration. 133. But furthermore, there is yet a second zone, respectively, a second belt, still very much further outside of the first belt, which, like the first, draws itself in a ring shape around the solar system. 134. Innumerable objects of all sizes are also in this belt, and so it speaks for itself that there are also very numerous cometary nuclei. 135. As in the first, there are also very large objects in the second, which are as large as the Earth or even bigger. 136. As a consequence of the great distance from the Sun and the absence of light from the objects in dark space, even with good telescopes they can hardly be seen from the Earth, or cannot be seen at all. 137. With the two belts, which can also be designated as rings, this deals with the remnants of that gigantic primordial cloud of gas, particles and objects, and so forth, from which the solar system, with all its planets, ultimately formed more than 5,500,000,000 years ago. 138. But the cloud's primordial matter did not form at the aforementioned time, rather it already formed more than 46 billion years ago, and then, in the course of time, condensed into its final form, and supplied the substance for the solar system more than 5,500,000,000 years ago. 139. Here and there objects drift away from the two aforementioned belts, as do cometary nuclei, which penetrate into the inner solar system. 140. In other words, 141. If a fixed star occasionally reaches a certain astronomical proximity, then its effect is that single cometary nuclei, from the many billion smallest, small, middle-sized, large and largest objects, loosen out of the bands of the two zones and occupy a course in the inner solar system. 142. Many of the comets, such as the one we have spoken of as Nibiru, move back again to their outermost regions of origin outside the inner solar system after their approach to the Sun and its planets, also the Earth, or they take an inner system course, so they therefore stay in the direct solar system as the system's own comets and they constantly, recurrently, follow their courses. 143. Many, which return to the outermost two belt zones, remain there for a very long time before they come back. 144. So the duration of the stay in the belts can be centuries, millennia, many millennia or even hundreds of millions of years before they return on their course again in the inner solar system if they were, or are, forced into a recurrent course by the Sun and its planets. 145. Others, on the other hand, become torn from their course by planets, by their moons or by the Sun, and, bursting asunder, impact with them. Billy, thank you for your explanations. Translator's note, this concludes Dyson's and Vivienne's translated portion. The following was translated by Benjamin Stevens. But in addition, I would still like to say something, if you permit. Quetzal, 146. Just speak. 147. You probably also know something about the comets, I suppose. Billy, yes. But please correct me if I say something wrong. So, comets are discovered practically every year, however, most of these are only visible with binoculars or telescopes, but not to the naked eye. Comets are also known as feather stars or tail stars, and occasionally, such appear in the sky, which offer a truly fantastic spectacle and which can even be observed over longer periods of time in the sky. Since ancient times, tail stars were regarded as spectacular and sensational celestial phenomena, and their sight alone in the day or night sky would cause a tremendous sensation and would often release panic-stricken anxiety. Looking at the comets from antiquity, it becomes clear that these were not yet regarded as celestial bodies because these tail-moving phenomena were attributed to the atmosphere, and to be sure, as similar phenomena comparable to lightning and clouds, thunder and rain, as well as hail and snow. If one studies the Almagest, a corruption of the translation of the Arabic title Al-Majisti, the most famous Greek astronomical manual of Ptolemy, one will not find a single occurrence of comets therein. Then, in the time when cometary phenomena in the sky won a special meaning for human beings, tail stars were held responsible for all events on Earth. The erroneous belief prevailed before, and this is even apparent today and will continue to be in the future with the crazy, false astrologers, prophets of doom, carping critics, and other lunatics and delusional believers, that comets would be responsible for the fate of individual humans as well as for the fate of entire peoples and the Earth itself as well as for the climate and natural disasters, etc. In general, comets were, as they still are today among those who are confused, regarded as great and malignant bringers of misfortune. Thus, the great, luminous, and menacing-looking tails of the feather stars aroused anxiety and terror. In a delusion-believing manner, it was accepted by the people who had strongly fallen to the God-delusional belief that comets were breeding rods of God, which were assigned to the world and the people under the moon. Only with the spectacular comet of 1577, which was even to be seen in full sunshine as a so-called light giant, did this delusional belief change somewhat, namely through the Danish astronomer Tycho Brahe, who provided evidence for the fact that tail stars were celestial bodies that drew their course far beyond the lunar orbit through the Sol system. With this, the form of the course still wasn't recognized for a long time, however, because a more precise determination was first achieved over 100 years later by a certain Gottfried Kirch. It was this man, then, who also observed the destroyer, whereby he discovered it with a telescope, which also happened for the first time in the history of the comet's discovery. That was in the year 1680. With this passage, the destroyer was visible for a very long time, namely from the 14th of November, 1680 until the 19th of March, 1681. It also drew a gigantic tail 80 degrees in length behind itself, which is a typical feature that occurs when a comet passes very close to the solar surface. To explain the matter to me in such a way on the great journey. Kirch didn't discover the destroyer intentionally but only through a happy stroke of fate, as he observed the planet Mars. Now, the Sol system's comets, which are also known as cosmic beacons, are subject to the Sol system's mechanical laws, and they are integral members of our solar system. This is so, even though they often move very far out into the space beyond the most distant planet Pluto and into the two belts, from where they had originally come. Sooner or later, on their closed courses, they return again and again to the inner solar system, also often in dangerous proximity to the Earth, just often first after centuries, millennia, or after many millions of years. In the 19th century, when the Earth people invented astrophysical research methods, details became known and were also recognized for the first time in reference to the nature of comets. Thus, it became increasingly clear that tail stars are actually just relatively small bodies that, nevertheless, go through very dramatic changes, once they come into the vicinity of the Sun, and through its rays, the formation of the comet's tails results. Even the actual feature or characteristic of the feather stars. Thus, comets are among the small objects of our solar system. In contrast to the planets, cometary structures usually move in very elongated, elliptical orbits with eccentricities. Thus, comets are, with few sporadic exceptions, celestial objects that always return at periodic intervals. Nevertheless, their orbital periods are very different. Long-period tail stars have orbital periods around our Sun of more than 200 years, while others, as already mentioned by you and me, require many millions of years for their return, whereby several hundred million years are not uncommon. Opposing these are the short-period comets, which come into the vicinity of the Sun and the Earth very frequently. Various of these short-period comets were influenced by the masses of the Sol planets as well as by the mass of the Sun in such a way that they no longer reach any further than into the proximity of the orbit of the planet Jupiter, where they then make a reversal and begin their inner system journey anew. In contrast to the planets themselves, which move in the so-called main plane of the solar system, there are all kinds of orbital inclinations with comets. And it must also be said that the tail stars, in comparison to planets and moons, are very small and low-mass celestial objects and that their diameters only range from a few hundred meters to about 70 kilometers. This is under normal conditions, when it doesn't concern a so-called giant or supergiant, which can be the size of the Earth or even larger. The actual core consists of rock, dust, and frozen water, as well as ammonia and methane, etc. Cometary structures are only visible as a result of their tails, for if this wasn't the case, then one could not see them in dark space. If an object comes into the vicinity of the Sun, approximately, depending on its size, within 4 to 12 astronomical units, then the gases of the comet evaporate and form its tail, which can be thousands, hundreds of thousands, or even hundreds of millions of kilometers long, depending on the size and composition of the comet. Also, the diameter of the tail can be up to 100,000 kilometers and more. A mixture of gas and dust, etc. allows the comet to appear as a vague, small spot reflecting in the sunlight. However, the gaseous components in the spectrum of the comet's coma also have their own luminosity. If the comet comes closer and closer to the Sun, then the radiation pressure and the solar wind naturally become stronger and blow the dust and gas away from the comet, whereby the coma or the tail of the comet forms, and indeed, opposite to the Sun, for the particle flow encounters the comet away from the central star. In this way, it is also possible that despite the very low, intrinsic density of the comet and through its own luminous, gaseous components and through the reflection of the sunlight, this begins to shine and becomes visible to the human eye. What is still to be mentioned is that the tail components are stimulated to illumination by the high energy components of the solar radiation. That is what I learned from Tua on my great journey. Quetzal, 148. And you still say that you would have memory difficulties since your collapse. 149. Your statements are very accurate. 150. Your memory is phenomenal. 151. But now, dear friend, I would still like to talk with you about the private matters. 152. My time is running out. Billy, then get going, my son. For my part, I also have no more questions for today. Translator's note. The rest of this contact report was translated into English by Dyson Devine and Vivienne Legg. Questions from the public in regard to the contact report of May 1, 1989, note from Floyna. Question, when I consider the Arat Athasata level, then indeed the spirit forms which are the must actually have insignificant to larger differentiated stages of evolution, somewhat like humans, only with very much finer gradations. So therefore, do its spirit forms which have still not been long in the Arat Athasata level have the lowest evolutionary level, and do those spirit forms, which stand shortly before the passage to the next plane have the highest evolutionary level? Billy, yes. That's right, because evolution is an infinitely variable development of learning and cognition as well as of the acquisition of true love, knowledge and wisdom. And this process is granted to all coarse matter life forms, as well as to all the domains of the spirit forms in their pure spirit energy levels. Consequently there are, in every we form, either material or spiritual, lower or lowest, respectively, higher or highest evolutionary stages. Question, because also the spirit forms of the Arat Athasata level have to evolve further, as also does every higher spirit form in the subsequent level, there must also exist for them a source of knowledge, perhaps in the form of an especially highly developed spirit form in the Arat Athasata level? Billy, no, in the Arhatathasata level, as also in all other higher levels, impulses in this regard come from the next highest level, as, however, also out of its own level's storage banks. With the Earth humans, or as with all other human material life forms in the entire universe, the repository banks are likewise of the most important significance, as also, however, is the first pure spirit plane Arhatathasata, out of which knowledge impulses are stored in the storage banks. So, after the development of the material life forms, in this case therefore the humans, they unconsciously take up this stored information out of the higher levels via the repository banks, process it, and thereby achieve development. Subsequently they therefore evolve. Question: when I consider Nokademian's spirit form, before it was reincarnated yet again out of the Arhatathasata level and returned to the material universe in a material human form, then, according to my deliberations, it must have taken on a very high evolutionary stage within the Arhatathasata level, somewhat short of the transition to the next level. Billy: yes. That is also right. Nokademian's pure spirit form was already very highly developed in the Arhatathasata level as the resolution to return in a material human body was made, whereby the implementation certainly could only be enabled through the authoritative engagement of the highest level, being the Pedar level. This is because, for Nokademian's spirit form, a special consistency alteration had to be created, only through which the spirit form could be capable of returning in a human body. Question: therefore is it so that Nokademian's spirit form takes in the highest conceivable spiritual levels of development and knowledge of all human life forms in the domain of the material universe? Billy: yes. That is right. This knowledge development level relates, however, really only to the concerns of the spirit, creation, the absolutum forms, the spiritual energy, the spirit levels and in the power of the spirit energy, etc. Thereby this knowledge and evolution level reaches only up to the highest level of the Arhatathasata. Question: that would therefore mean that no sources of knowledge at all and no storage banks at all, up to the Arhatathasata level, are closed to this spirit form? Consequently, therefore, the Nokademian spirit form is the only spirit form in the material universe that not only has at its disposal the highest knowledge of the spirit, rather it also still continuously expands and impels itself forward on the highest planes, simply because it is capable of using all sources of knowledge up to the Arhatathasata level. Billy: yes. Then there is the necessity that the Nokademian spirit form, in the period of time that it again enlivens a material human body, also further evolves in the knowledge of the Arhatathasata level. That must therefore be so, because the spirit form, when it returns again to its original pure spirit level, has lost no love nor wisdom nor knowledge on the highest plane, rather it can progress further, unrestrained, on the path of the transition to the next higher and finer pure spirit level. Question: is that the secret that the plagiarian tried to get to the bottom of? Billy: yes. That is to say, that was still so in 1989, as I spoke with Quetzal in respect of the photo that came into my hands. In the meantime the plagiarian got to the bottom of the secret and solved it. Question: I have a further question regarding the sons of Nokademian and Enoch. They have indeed obligated themselves to spread the mission of disseminating the knowledge of the spiritual teachings in the entire universe and to stay faithful to this mission. I assume that the same applies to the sons of Nokademian and Enoch and again for their sons. I also further assume that this obligation is maintained up to today and has also been carried over to all descendants who live in the current time. And also all this will indeed be carried over into the future. Billy: yes, whereby, however, quite a few will not act according to their determination and will therefore not observe their obligation. A long chain of Nokademian and Enoch's descendants, respectively sons, is arranged under this obligation. Question: but since ancient times surely also the daughters of Nokademian and Enoch have been included in the mission whose lineage is exactly as strong as any of the sons. Can you yourself think what their task is? Billy, it can quite certainly be assumed, respectively, it is true that their task is that of every female life form, namely to bring female and male descendants into life and therefore to further pass on life. But their duty is also to protect and conserve life, love and knowledge as well as the essence, that is, the wisdom, that results thereby, and to further pass it on to the descendants, so that they also travel the correct path and they, through their action, carry the knowledge and the obligation further into the most distant future. Question: accordingly, I also assume that with at least some of the core group members who have decided upon core group membership, that it also concerns the most distant descendants of the descendants of Nocademian and Enoch. Billy: yes, it concerns very far distant descendants, and it is not just a few who belong to this lineage. Question: from that I take it that, with the so-called punishment incarnations into which each core group member would be arranged, who are, according to the determination, in the core group, it has nothing to do with punishment incarnations, because for me, according to the spirit teachings, that would make no sense. Rather, I see it that these people, as they recognized that they, as the bearers of the mission and duty, had become unfaithful to their obligation, sought a path to more firmly anchor the mission, and that therewith connected duty, to themselves. Billy: yes, you can say it that way. Those who are faithful to their mission have observed authoritative impulses from the storage bank, and correctly decoded and utilized them. Subsequently they seek and find the path of the mission and now take it, as they have since ancient times. On one hand the mission and their entry into it serves, in the first instance, their own evolution, and on the other hand, it serves also for them to teach the people and to convey love, knowledge and wisdom, as well as inner peace and inner freedom, balance and harmony. Question: the purpose for these incarnations on the earth is therefore not only to teach the earth humans, rather, in the first instance, that the knowledge itself to do with the mission and the duty connected therewith, would finally be deeply anchored in oneself in such a way so that, in the distant future, no more deviation from it would be possible? Billy: Quetzal would now say, that is of correctness. Question: I assume that not only to Samjace and Quetzal are in the Srutin stage of evolution, rather also the bearer of the spirit form of Nocademian and Enoch. And I further assume that he already reached this stage a very long time before they did. Is it so that in the measure of consciousness he is already around one or more stages further than to Samjace and Quetzal? Billy: the Srut evolution level already begins before the attainment of the position of JSEHWJSEH. The position of Srutin is a part of the Srutin evolution level. Now if Nocademian's spirit form has a very high stage of evolution, then that doesn't mean that the human in which this spirit form is reincarnated would therefore be something other than a simple human. His consciousness and the personality which thereby arises from it are inevitably adjusted into the present human evolutionary circumstances, which means that it therefore, seen quite pragmatically, is really primitive. Also when the knowledge of the spiritual matters is so high that it enables the pressing toward and into the storage banks up to the high levels. It is a process which is possible only through the accepted help of the spiritual energy, its power and its knowledge and wisdom. The consciousness and the personality that thereby arises from it cannot be one for one swapped with the spirit form. A spirit form always contains a much higher evolutionary stage than the consciousness and its personality. The consciousness is always fitted to the circumstances of the life form, its living conditions and its environment. The emergence of damage to that which pertains to the consciousness through too much knowledge, etc., is thereby hindered. And now when the Nocademian spirit form in spite of its higher development lives in a human whose consciousness is even higher developed than that of the fellow humans generally, in respect of the knowledge of the spirit, then this is also only possible through certain altered measures that were made possible through the Petar level. Question: the spirit form of Nocademian must be monstrously strong, very much more powerful than every other spirit form in the material universe. Is it because today's bearer, respectively a human, who carries this spirit form in himself, has enabled, not only the obtaining of Tuas knowledge, but the far surpassing of it, that he was named the uppermost designated advisor and teacher of the pledger in spirit leadership.